That's a lot of brahmanas. Sankhyanam yadavanam ka karishyati mahatmanam yatra yutanam ayuta lakshinashte sa ahukaha. Who can count all the great Yadavas, when among them King Ugrasena alone was accompanied by an entourage of 30 trillion attendants? So this is, if you thought 38 million teachers was far out, try this. 30 trillion attendants. So this is Ayutanam of tens of thousands, Ayuta times 10,000, Lakshena with 300,000. So this is a lot. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti explains why specifically 30 trillion rather than an indefinite number of tens of trillions is stated here to be the number of King Ugrasena's attendants. This is just Maharaj Ugrasena. Don't worry about the others. He does so by citing the interpretational rule of Kapinjaladikarana, the logic of referring to pigeons. Somewhere in the Vedas is found the injunction that one should sacrifice some pigeons. This plural number should be taken to mean not an indiscriminate number of pigeons, but precisely three of them. Since the Vedas never leave any matter vague, the rules of Mimamsa interpretation take three as the default number when no specific number is given. Devasura hava hatta daitaya ye sudu darunaha te chotpana manushyeshu vajajripta babadire. The savage descendants of Diti, who had been killed in past ages in battles between the demigods and demons, took birth among among human beings and arrogantly harassed the general populace. Tanigrahaya harina prokta deva yado kule. Avitiena kula satam tesham ekadikam nipa. To subdue these demons, Lord Hari told the demigods to descend into the dynasty of Yadu. They comprised 101 clans, O king. Then he finished here. This is interesting because at the beginning of the 10th canto of the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhumi approaches Lord Brahma to protest the treatment that she's receiving as a result of the behaviour of the Kshatriyas, these belligerent Kshatriyas. And now they're being mentioned here right at the end of the 10th canto. So they're mentioned at the beginning and now they're being mentioned at the end. And this is the reason why, well, it's not the only reason why, but certainly the immediate reason, the apparent cause for Krishna's appearance and for the appearance of the Yadus. Right? And here it's explaining how the Yadus disappeared, again, by Krishna's arrangement. They're disappearing or they're leaving. And of course that's explained later on in the Bhagavad Gita. But it is interesting to note that this is the introduction, if you like, and it's also the outro, as mentioned in the end of the 10th canto. And here it is. To subdue these demons, Lord Hari told the demigods to descend into the dynasty of Yadu. They comprised 101 clans, O king. And their purpose was to combat with the demons. Tesham pramanam bhagavan prabhut vena bhavad darahi ye chanuvar tinastasya vavrad vavrid hu sarvayadavaha. Because Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Yadavas accepted him as their ultimate authority, and among them all those who were his intimate associates especially flourished. Savyasana tanalapa krida snanadi karmasu navidu samtamatmanam vishnaya krishna chetasaha. The Vrishnis were so absorbed in Krishna consciousness that they forgot their own bodies while sleeping, sitting, walking, conversing, playing, bathing, and so on. Forgot their own bodies. That's how elevated they were in Krishna consciousness, in samadhi, practically speaking, and so not even aware of their. Tirtham chakre nipponam yad ajani yadushu svasarit padasocham. This is a very long verse. Vid snigdha svarupam yayur ajita parasvir yadartenya yatnaha yannamam mangala ganam shrutam atagaditum yat gaditam yat krito gotra dharmaha krishnas yoitan no na chitram chiti bara haranam kala chakra yudasya. The heavenly Ganges is a holy place of pilgrimage because her waters wash Lord Krishna's feet. But when the Lord descended among the Yadus, his glories eclipsed the Ganges as a holy place. Both those who hated Krishna and those who loved him attained eternal forms like his in the spiritual world. The unattainable and supremely self-satisfied goddess of fortune, for the sake of whose favour everyone else struggles, belongs to him alone. His name destroys all inauspiciousness when heard or chanted. He alone has set forth the principles of the various disciplic successions of sages. What wonder is it that he, whose personal weapon is the wheel of time, relieved the burden of the earth? Purport. From beginning to end, the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam has been exclusively dedicated to reciting the pastimes of Lord Krishna in Vrindavan, Mathura and Dwarka. As Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti points out, this verse sums up the 10th canto by mentioning five special glories of Sri Krishna that even his expansions, plenary portions and incarnations do not display. This is important. Five special glories of Sri Krishna that his expansions, plenary portions and incarnations do not display. First, Lord Krishna's reputation eclipsed that of the holy Ganges when he descended into the Yadu dynasty. Previous to this, Mother Ganges was the most sacred of all tirthas, being the water that had bathed Lord Vamanadeva's lotus feet. Another river, the Jamuna, became even greater than the Ganges by contacting the dust from Sri Krishna's feet in the districts of Braja and Mathura. Ganga Sata Guna Prayo Mature Mama Mandale Jamuna Visruta Devi Natrakarya Vicharana. The renowned Jamuna in my domain of Mathura is hundreds of times greater than the Ganges, About this there can be no dispute, O goddess. Varaha Purana. So the first thing is that Krishna, by touching the Jamuna with his lotus feet, makes the Jamuna more sacred than the Ganga. Here, this verse is quoted from the Varaha Purana. Hundreds of times greater than the Ganga. First one. Second, and I've heard Banaswami mentions this one often. Second, Lord Krishna gave liberation not only to his surrendered devotees, but also to those who considered themselves his enemies. So this is Krishna's specific potency here. Second one, unique. Devotees like the cowherd girls of Braj and others attained his personal association by entering into his eternal pleasure pastimes in the spiritual world, while inimical demons killed by him attained the Sayujya Mukti of merging into his divine form. When he was present on this earth, Lord Krishna's compassion extended to his family, friends and servants, and also to his enemies and their families, friends and servants. Great authorities like Lord Brahma have mentioned this fact. Sadveshad Ivaputanapi Sakulatvam Eva Devapati. Oh, sorry, Devapita. My Lord, you have already given yourself to Putana and her family members simply because she dressed herself as a devotee. Bhagavatam 10.14.35. So the second item is that Krishna gives liberation to everyone, even to his enemies. Inimical demons killed by him attain the Sayujya Mukti, emerging into his divine form. Third, Goddess Lakshmi, Lord Narayan's constant companion, whom great demigods served meanly to win her slight favour, was unable to win the privilege of joining the intimate company of Lord Krishna's devotees in Braj. Despite her eagerness to participate in the rasa dance and other pastimes enacted by Sri Krishna, and despite the severe austerity she underwent to achieve that end, she could not transcend her natural mood of reverence. The sweetness and intimacy Lord Krishna manifested in Vrindavan constitute a unique kind of opulence found nowhere else, even in Vaikuntha. As Sri Uddhava says, Yanmarcha lilo payakam svayoga mayabalam dashayata grihitam vismapanam svasya chaso bhagarte parampadam bhushana bhushanangam. To exhibit the strength of his spiritual potency, Lord Krishna manifested a form just suitable for his human-like pastimes in the material world. This form was wonderful even for him and was the supreme abode of the wealth of good fortune. Its limbs were so beautiful that they increased the beauty of the ornaments worn on different parts of his body. Bhagavatam 3.2.12. So the third special glory of Krishna's pastimes is that despite the fact that Lakshmi, whom everybody worships to get her favour, right? Everybody wants the favour of Lakshmi. Everybody wants good fortune. Nobody likes distress. Everybody wants the favour of Goddess Lakshmi. And despite the fact that she's the eternal associate of Narayan, so she's always with Narayan, she's so dear to Lord Narayan, yet She couldn't enter into the pastimes with Krishna. So if she's the most dear associate of Lord Narayana, that's very extraordinary. She's the most dear to Lord Vishnu, yet she's not allowed into the pastimes of Braj. And of course this was the challenge of Lord Chaitanya to the Tattvavadis that he was staying with in South India. They worship Lord Narayan, Lord Vishnu, and Lakshmi as supreme. Right? So, Lord Chaitanya, actually, was it Vyankata Bhatta, was it? Yeah, Vyankata Bhatta, is that right? Yeah. So he asked him this question, you know, why is it then if Lord Vishnu and if Lord Narayan and Lakshmi are the supreme personality of Godhead, why is it that Lord Krishna wouldn't allow Lakshmi to enter into his Braja pastimes? This is his question. Why is it? Despite the fact that she was so eager to participate and despite the fact that she performed austerities for many thousands of years, she was not able to achieve that goal. Of course, and it's explained it here. She could not transcend her natural mood of reverence. Mm-hmm. Huh? So there's something about Krishna's pastimes that make them so attractive for the goddess of fortune that she wants to participate in them, but she has a disqualification, she's not allowed. Huh? And then explaining the purport here. The sweetness and intimacy of Lord Krishna's pastimes manifested in Vrindavan constitute a unique kind of opulence found nowhere else, even in Vaikuntha. That mood of intimacy is an opulence over and above any wealth, if you like, or any power, or any potency. Actually, it is a power and it is a potency, that intimate association with Krishna, devoid of this mood of awe and reverence, is most attractive and desirable to Krishna. You know, everybody's approaching the Lord for the fulfillment of their desires. And so in one sense, they're just approaching God like he's the order supplier in a mood of awe and reverence. Whereas the residents of Vrindavan, they're approaching Krishna only with a desire to please Krishna. They're not looking for something for themselves. Automatically they get pleasure from making Krishna happy, but their desire is to please their beloved. So it's a very different mood. And because it is devoid of awe and reverence, then they can see themselves rather than he is the supreme. They can also take on roles or relationships with him where they become the controllers of Krishna, like his mother and father. For example, go to bed, get up, get dressed, do it this way, do it that way. So they're actually controlling Krishna. But because their desire to serve him and to love him, their affection for him is of such a pure degree, pure nature, pure quality, that controlling of Krishna is out of affection, it's out of love, rather than out of a desire to manipulate or to exploit. Very satisfying, that kind of intimacy is very satisfying. So, because of that awe and reverential mood, then and it reminds me of a pastime in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I can't remember the names of the personalities. There was one devotee, and it might have been Jagadananda Pandit from memory, who was advised by Lord Chaitanya not to associate too closely with the residents of Braj, because their mood of rendering service to Krishna was very simple and very, what's the word, spontaneous. Was it Jagadananda? Yeah. He was warned not to be, because Jagadananda would become critical of their very intimate dealings and very, what should we say, familiar relationship with Krishna. Jagadananda is Rukmini, is it?
Is
it? Satyabhama, yeah. So he's one of the queens. His role in Krishna Leela is as one of the queens of Dwarka. So he was advised not to be too. And as a result of their familiar dealings, he would become critical of them. Right? They're too familiar with Krishna. They do not. There's no awe and reverence in their relationship. Right? So Lakshmi is not allowed into the pastimes of Krishna. In Braj with his very close associates and intimate associates of Braj because of this mood of awe and reverence. Fourth, the name Krishna is superior to the name Narayana. Right, so this is the next item. The name Krishna is superior to the name Narayana and to those of all of Lord Krishna's other expansions. These two syllables, Krish and Na, combine together to destroy all inauspiciousness and illusion. When recited, the name Krishna becomes Shrutamata. That is to say, the recitation of Krishna's name totally crushes Matnati, the excellence of all other spiritual practices described in the revealed scriptures, Shruta. In the words of the Brahmanda Purana, Sahasranam Nam, Punyanam, Triravritya tu Yatphalam, Ekavritya tu Krishnasya, Namaikam tat prayachati. This is a good verse to learn. By uttering the single name of Krishna just once, one attains the same benefit as that gained by reciting Lord Vishnu's 1,000 names 3 times. Right? So just by saying Krishna is as good as reciting the Vishnu Sahasranam 3 times. Huh? Okay, what can we say? What can you say about that? Nothing. Fifth, Lord Krishna solidly reinstated dharma, the bull of religion, on his 4 legs of compassion, austerity, cleanliness and truth. Thus dharma could once again become Gotra, the protector of the earth. Sri Krishna also established the religious function of Govardhan Puja to honour his favourite hill, the cows and the brahmanas. He also became the hill, Gotra, himself, assuming its form to accept the cowherd's offerings. Moreover, he cultivated the dharma or loving nature of Braj's divine cowherds, Gotras, whose love for him has never been equalled. These are just a few of the wonderful features of Lord Krishna's unique personality. So five features of Krishna's pastimes in the 10th canto. What was the first one?
Yamuna spirit.
Huh? Yamuna spirit. Yeah. What was the second one? Yes. Third one. Yeah, Lakshmi wasn't allowed into the intimate pastimes of the Rasalila. And the fourth one. Krishna's name is superior to all others. Yeah. It's equal to chanting the Vishnu Sahasranam three times. And the fifth one. Yeah, and Dharma in a form of?
In the form of God and Buddha. And cow
worshiping. Yeah, worshiping. Well, it's interesting here, it says. I'll read that again. Lord Krishna solidly reinstated Dharma, the bull of religion, on his four legs of compassion, austerity, cleanliness and truth. So he re-established Dharma, the bull of religion. Thus Dharma could once again become Gotra, which means the protector of the earth. Sri Krishna also established the religious function of Govardhan Puja to honour his favourite hill, the cows and the brahmanas. He also became the hill, Gotra, himself assuming its form to accept the cowherd's offerings. Moreover, he cultivated the dharma or loving nature of Braja's divine cowherds, Gotras, whose love for him has never been equalled. So, he re-established Dharma, the bull of religiosity, but he also established the religious function of Govardhan Puja to honour the hill, the cows and the brahmanas. He himself became the hill to accept the offerings. So he became the earth itself, basically, to accept the offerings of these three personalities. Oh, well, the hill itself, the cows and the brahmanas. And then it mentions here, he cultivated the dharma or loving nature of Braja's divine cowherds, the gotras. So he this is a little complicated, this one, because it really revolves around cow protection and also the protection of the earth, plus also Brahminical culture. You know, this Govinda is the Lord's manifestation of Braj, and in Braj, the principal duty of the devotees there is looking after the cows and looking after the earth and looking after the brahmanas. All of these things go together. In one sense, it's sort of like, it's the original eco-friendly kind of culture. Do you know what I mean? It's the original eco-village. Krishna's demonstrating this very simple lifestyle of living dependent on the cows, dependent on the land, dependent on spiritual culture, Brahminical culture. Right? Which is what Prabhupada encouraged us to establish on our farming communities. Live simply, look after the cows, protect the land, live in harmony with the land, and have time for spiritual emancipation, spiritual advancement. So this is the fifth principle, that bull of religion manifesting compassion, austerity, cleanliness and truthfulness. Woo. Very interesting. So what are the five things again? Jamuna. Second one.
Liberation.
Second one is?
Liberation.
Demons get liberated, yeah. Third one?
Lakshmi
can't enter. Krishna's name is most powerful. And the fifth is? Dharma. Religious culture. But especially this Gotra, which means protecting the cows. Oh, sorry, protecting the earth. Huh? Gotra, mentioned here, the protector of the earth. Gotra. Then becoming the hill, Gotra. And then Gotras, the cows. Cowherd boys, cowherd men, basically. Interesting. I don't know what to say about the statements of the queens, other than that they speak for themselves. You tell Krishna to come here. Right? Her chastising Krishna in a mood of separation. Their love for Krishna is not the same as the maidens of Braj, but still there's a similarity. Does anybody have any comments or questions?
Okay.
Yes, Mark.
That's why Prabhupada did not want to say International Society of God Consciousness. He said International Society of Krishna.
Yes. Yeah, much more potency in the name Krishna.
Right?
Yeah. And you know, in one sense, God is like, you know, the boss of everyone. That's the conception. Like the Parameshwara, right? The supreme controller. Because Krishna also is the supreme controller. But there's much, much more in Krishna's character. Much, much more in the relationships that Krishna has with his devotees than just this idea of God. That's sort of like limited to the material sphere, right? God's the boss and we're all underneath him. And if you want something, then you pray to him. Our Father who art in heaven, please give us this day our XYZ, ABC, 1, 2, 3. Right? Whereas the devotees approach Krishna, because people also approach Krishna and it's interesting, actually, you know, there are so many people who come to the temple and they get to pray to Krishna and get his darshan, and, you know, they'll pay to Prabhupada and put a donation in the donation box. But they miss out on the real gift because they're close, so there's no loss, in one sense, there's no loss. But they're actually missing out on the real gift of devotional service, of chanting the name of Krishna, just like it's mentioned here. Of course, as Krishna says, Neha bikramanaso sti pratyavayona vijite, that there's no loss or diminution. And they'll gradually be brought closer and closer. This is Krishna's pulling all of us closer and closer to him. If we keep engaged in devotional service, then Krishna will pull us closer and closer. And in such a way so that we'll also give up this mood of awe and reverence, you know, and wanting to approach the Lord. reverentially. Because it's also mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada mentions that even if the devotees have a very intimate, affectionate relationship with Krishna, they keep it internal and they still manifest the external processes of sadhana bhakti. So this, this intimate relationship with Krishna and this affectionate, intimate mood is something that is cultivated by the devotees internally, not something that they display necessarily externally. Anything else?
Interesting. Some of the older rich bosses said that about 40 years ago, like, not so many people would go around very much.
Yeah.
And now on the Purnima of Kartik, the last Purnima, there 2 million people go around, you know, since Prabhupada's preached. And now the 2 million, like, just because of Prabhupada's potency, and establishing Giriraj, just because, as it says, that final Krishna Chaitanya Thakur says the final purpose of Krishna was to establish Giriraj's importance. But God is actually still fully here. Krishna himself, when we came to Mount, is still fully here as Giriraj. So that was, that's just not known. Yeah, the old rich buses said not so many people used to go around there. But now that point, like 2 million people go around that day, one day. And then that's the question of Prabhupada fulfill that desire.
That'd be. Yeah. And you know what's gonna happen? The interesting thing is, it's happening now, Govardhan's gonna become like Vrindavan. It's going to be full of cars and buses and hotels and the works. It's interesting. The mystery of Govardhan will remain accessible only to the very, very advanced and very pure devotees. But it's a fact. It's what you're saying is basically. It's a testament to Prabhupada, really. Mm. Prabhupada really was the ambassador of the Srimad Bhagavatam, when you think about it. And as you say, you know, so many people go around Govardhan Hill that previously didn't know. And you're chanting, you know, Krishna's name, so that's, you know, every time you chant the name of Krishna, that's 3 times the Vishnu Sahasranam. Right, because you're walking around Govardhan Hill. I'm so unfortunate I can't take advantage of it. Even though I walk around Govardhan Hill, I chant Krishna's name, I still feel like a demon from Patala Loka. To see, Prabhupada's very merciful. Jatinda?
Yes, the whole thing gets confusing, like when people came to Prabhupada and asked that, what about Jesus or Christ, they have beliefs in. So Prabhupada said, as far as you are God conscious, it's okay. But when they hear that Krishna, that if you don't know the name of the God and the potency in it, so then you don't get the actual benefit of, you know, knowing the God.
No, they get a benefit, and they also know God, but there's different levels of God realization. Right? It's okay to know God as the Father, right? We know God as the Father too. His name's Lord Vishnu, sort of like God in the office, right? So we know Him, and He's okay, right? There's nothing wrong with understanding that level of realization. There's a benefit. Seeing God as the, you know, it's interesting. In the Bhagavad Gita, it's mentioned that just giving in charity is good, right? We were reading this the other day. Just giving in charity, working for the benefit of others is good. May not be the best. The best is to always think of Krishna. But Krishna says, if you can't do that, then follow the rules and regulations of devotional service. If you can't do that, work for me. If you can't do that, then give up the results of your activities. If you can't do that, then even Prabhupada mentions meditating on the impersonal feature is beneficial if that's all you've got. Right? If that's the only realization that you have, that's good. Because he mentions if you come into the association of the devotees and then you learn about Krishna and you start practicing the process of devotional service, then those things are not necessary. But there are levels of advancement that are encouraged because they lead one, just like worship of the demigods. The Vedas encourage worship of the demigods to elevate people, basically. Right? Once we're a devotee, we don't need those things. But without the direct process of devotional service, these indirect activities are actually beneficial for the practitioner. So if and that's why Prabhupada, you know, he would encourage people to follow their religion because he understood, he appreciated this is God consciousness. So encourage it. Then gradually, just like I was reading in Indradunda Maharaj's diary yesterday, the devotees were pointing out there was one man who'd come for the festival and he was sitting a little bit of a way off and he wasn't facing the crowd and he was listening to the lectures every day. And then Indradunda Maharaj asked the devotees, who's that man? They said, well, he's the local priest. He likes our philosophy, but he's embarrassed that his parishioners see him here. So he keeps himself a little bit of a distance away. And then there was another man who bought some books, and he said, you know, the devotee who told him, I sold this person all of these books, and I didn't think he was very interested in the philosophy because he just had a list of books that he wanted to buy. I asked him who they were for, and he said, these are for my friend who's a priest in a distant town. And he's embarrassed to come here and buy the books for himself, but he's interested in our philosophy, he wants to find out more. But, you know, he sent his friend along to buy the books.
False ego.
Huh?
False ego.
False ego? Oh, I don't know, false ego. Maybe practical, you know, didn't want to be... So, you know, we don't discourage, we encourage. We try to encourage. Dave.
Oh, I was just thinking before, what was the result of the Indra's Ashwamedha sacrifice?
The result of Indra's Ashwamedha sacrifice?
Because we've had to pay more than that, but what was the result?
Well, the Ashwamedha sacrifice is a... something like that. But of course, you know, it'd be a mistake to think that it was just a sacrifice of a horse. It's actually to demonstrate the purity of the brahmanas in their chanting of the mantras, because the horse would be reborn in a new body, basically, right? So it was an activity of great purity and of great penance? Is that the right word? Not even penance. It's a sacrifice.
To do it?
I don't know. There must be some benefit from doing a Ashwamedha sacrifice. I'm not sure exactly what it is. I guess, but you can take birth in Indra's planet. I don't know. You can become Indra.
To become Lord Indra.
Yeah, king of the heaven. You perform 100 Ashwamedha sacrifices, and you become the king of heaven. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the benefit. I don't. No, we don't. No, but what it does is basically what it's emphasizing is the potency of the chanting, basically. Right? Same with the description of three times, you know, the Vishnu Sahasranam. one name of Krishna. It just underlines the potency of chanting Krishna's name. That's what it's for. Not that we want the benefit of an Ashvamedha Yajna. Is that one Krishna? Oh no, walking around Govardhan Hill. So here's the thing, if you walk around Govardhan Hill 100 times, then you can become Lord Indra. Right? And what is Indra? What is Indra? Yes, but what is he? He's a devotee. Right? He's a devotee. So, you know, if you walk around Govardhan Hill, what do you become? Huh? A devotee. If you walked 100 times around Govardhan Hill, you become a devotee. But see, here's the thing. As you pointed out, most devotees are not walking around Govardhan Hill so they can become Indra. Right? They're walking around Govardhan Hill because they want all sorts of things. Liberation, a new job, a good husband, a good wife, good children, blah, 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 so many things. But there are some devotees who are walking around Govardhan Hill just so that they can become good devotees, just so they can become servants of Krishna.
Isn't it also that it just has to be done?
We
don't try to retain anything?
No, not that it has to be done, but the devotees do it for purification, for service. They want to become servants. They want to become pure-hearted. They want to make some spiritual advancement. Yes, yep.
Just when we walk around Govardhan Hill, then as we go around, there's every place there's little stuff. It's Krishna performing different pastimes.
Yeah.
So as the devotees go around, the reason we do Govardhan is as we go around, we remember each pastime. And you'll see why Radhana Swami, when he goes around, he stops on each place and he speaks for an hour about that pastime and they keep going and then stop. And that's why we do Govardhan Parikrama, because it evokes. Because Rupa Goswami says, always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. So that's why we go around, because you can remember everywhere you go, remember Krishna. Did this here, did this here, did this here.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily to get anything. In fact, you may get things that you didn't even anticipate. Right? Well, don't preach to them. Go and find somebody who doesn't.
Yeah. Everybody, they are thinking that, oh, Jesus is God. And when we tell them Krishna is God, they get offended.
Don't talk to them. Yeah. If you're offending people when you're preaching, stop preaching. It's one of the 10 offences in chanting Hare Krishna to preach to the faithless. That's a tough one to learn. So, you know, you have to become an expert preacher. That means when you talk to people about Krishna, they come away with a good impression. They think, oh, I just met a nice devotee. Yes.
And I was thinking, how did this work come about when there's these different religions and, you know, these human beings just like us really, really believe that this is their highest truth, and does it mean that their karma is just not as good as ours or something, that their faith is not as, I don't know.
Yes. I don't think I'll say any more than that. Yes, it bewilders me too. Well, here's my take on it. A devotee is actually humble, and he feels or she feels themselves greatly fortunate that they can render some service from the spiritual platform, you know, from the understanding that I'm a servant of God and I should render some service to Him. Rather than thinking, I'm the best servant of God and you guys are not very good servants of God at all. Now, in fact, we learn from the teachings of Rupa Goswami that those devotees who think themselves the best is a symptom of a Kanishta Adhikari. You know, we are the best devotees because we have the best God. Well, God is the best. Yes, He's the best, but He's good for everybody. He's the best for everyone. And you know, you get the situation where you find some followers of God think they're so good that they'll kill the others of followers of God because they're not good enough. Right? We've seen that in history. There was when India was invaded, then the Brahmanas would be killed. You know, I don't know why. They're inferior, I suppose. They were seen as inferior by one particular group of devotees. Thought that the other particular group of devotees wasn't good enough, and so therefore they slaughtered them. So that's called Kanishta Adhikari. Actually, you could almost call it demoniac. In the name of, fanaticism. Fanaticism in the name of religiosity. And Prabhupada mentions, you know, religion without philosophy is very likely to become fanaticism or sentimentalism. Yeah. Fanaticism. But generally you'll find, you know, the actual quality of a devotee is that they become very humble. And they appreciate anybody's service to God. Right? But generally speaking, the advice that's given by the acharyas and in the shastra is we don't try to preach to the faithless, to those who can't understand and who get disturbed by our instructions. And you know, we don't say to the Christians, you know, you're no good. We're good, you're not good. Prabhupada didn't preach like that at all. He encouraged them. That's good. That's God conscious. It is. And then he would press on other points. Like he would say, you know, if we're followers of God, then we should be following His instructions. Huh? Thou shalt not kill, etc. So probably impress on these points. So encourage people. Yes, become a devotee of God or Jesus or whatever and follow His instructions. Because you follow the instructions, then you get benefit. You'll make advancement. Huh? Follow the instructions. But we don't say, you know, Jesus is not God, you should follow Krishna. Right? That's just, you'll just get in trouble. Just in a fight with somebody. Well, I think we should finish here. Gandharva Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.